You've tuned in to the most crazy rocking metal podcast on the air. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Metal from the Inside.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to the Metal from the Inside podcast. I'm your host, Sydney Taylor. Thank you guys so much for tuning into another episode and joining me for another week. You guys are listening to episode 34 of the Metal from the Inside podcast. This week, I'm bringing you guys a little bit of a different episode than I've ever done here on the podcast. I still have a guest who I'm going to introduce in just a moment, but instead of getting into an interview, me and my guest are actually going to get into our top 10 favorite Whitesnake songs of all time. Joining me this week is Mr. Pete Pardo from the Sea of Tranquility publication and YouTube channel. And I've mentioned Sea of Tranquility and Pete on my podcast many times before. I'm sure a lot of you are familiar with Sea of Tranquility and everything that Pete does over on his channel, but I am frequently a guest over on Pete's channel. I'm a member of the Hudson Valley Squares, which we do weekly shows every Monday evening. I also guest here and there for some one-off shows, whether it's a Ranking the Albums episode or a Top 10 Songs episode, like we're going to do here on the Metal from the Inside podcast this week. So around like a month or a month and a half ago, Pete and I had kind of thrown around the idea of sitting down and discussing our top 10 favorite Whitesnake songs. You know, Pete and I both love Whitesnake and, you know, the band ranks pretty high up there for, you know, one of our favorite bands of all time. So we, you know, tossed around the idea of doing this, and it just so happened this week, the interview that I had planned ended up not working out for this week. We had to reschedule. So it's weird because sometimes I'll do a bunch of interviews in a week and have a lot of interviews lined up for, you know, the weeks after. And sometimes I do an interview that week that is that week's episode. So that was the case for this week. And due to the artist having to reschedule, I was kind of left wondering what episode I wanted to do this week. And it popped into my head that this was the perfect opportunity to have Pete come on and we could talk all about Whitesnake and kind of have this be the kickoff of this kind of episode here on the podcast. Like I mentioned, this is a big topic and series that Pete does on his show a lot. So I figured, you know, to kind of take a little bit of that style, you know, kind of watching Pete and being a part of those rankings over the last couple of months has really inspired me to think about my own rankings and episodes that I might want to do over here on my podcast every once in a while. You know, when a situation like this week arises and I don't have an interview with an artist or an industry professional lined up. So I figured that it would be a great opportunity to have the master of top 10 songs come on to kind of kick off this little new series here on the podcast. And like I mentioned, we both love Whitesnake so much and David Coverdale as we get into a little bit in the conversation. So I figured, you know, what better person to have than Pete on this week's episode. And aside from Pete just revealing his top 10 favorite Whitesnake songs, Pete also gets into his first experiences getting into Whitesnake and what it was like discovering the band in the 80s, you know, when Slide It In was released and that 1987 self-titled record. So we get into a little bit about Pete's experience becoming a Whitesnake fan, and yeah, just kind of get into depth on every single song that we choose, a little bit about the instrumentation and the comparisons between the early Whitesnake, which again is that period from the mid 70s to the early 80s, and then how the band went on to evolve from albums like Slide It In to the 1987 self-titled record to Slip of the Tongue, and you know, how they progressed to the band that they are today. So we get into all of that in this week's conversation. I hope you guys enjoy the kind of differentiation here with the episodes. I know it's not the typical interview, but I think that this is just a super fun, laid-back conversation, which is what I want. When I was starting this podcast, I wanted to have just fellow music fans on the podcast as well. And of course, Pete is also a journalist. He does a lot of interviews like myself over on his channel and a lot of different types of shows, which I say at the very end of our conversation, but you know, he does so many different segments on his channel and he's a big journalist himself. So he is in the industry, but when I talk to Pete and we get into doing the episodes over on his channel and, you know, the Hudson Valley Squares episodes, it really just feels like I'm talking to a fellow music fan, not even just somebody who I work with in this industry, but just somebody who loves music as much as I do. And that was really the vibe of this conversation, just a really super laid back listen and just us talking about one of our favorite bands. So I hope you guys enjoy enjoy listening to this. I'm super excited because there is a lot in the works for Metal from the Inside right now. I revealed this on Twitter yesterday, and I'm hoping to reveal more to you soon, hopefully by next week's episode. I'm currently working with one of my favorite metal labels on a really exciting project for Metal from the Inside, and it involves you guys, I think, and I hope that it is something that you guys will be really looking forward to and be happy about, and it's something that I'm really excited for and just kind of feels very surreal, so I'm really looking forward to sharing more with you soon. I know that that's very vague, but I want to make sure everything's in order and set and ready to go before I spill the beans on anything, so look forward to that on next week's episode. I'll also be sharing when this announcement comes out, like I said, hopefully early next week, on all my social media. Again, I'm on Twitter at @STaylorOfficial, and I'm on Instagram at @SydneyAnnaTaylor, and, you know, aside from all the Metal from the Inside social media pages as well, all of our updates are always shared there, so you guys can stay up to date and everything, and look forward to that special announcement coming very soon. I also have an interview on next week's episode with one of my favorite vocalists of all time. I wonder if you guys can guess who I will be speaking to on episode 35 of the podcast. If you think you have a guess, be sure to tweet me who you think will be joining me on next week's episode. As I mentioned, one of my favorite vocalists who I actually had the opportunity to speak with a couple of years back, and we haven't had the chance to catch up since, so I'm really looking forward to getting the chance to sit down, catch up with him, and talk about everything that he's been up to over the last couple of years, and especially during the pandemic, so you will not want to miss that conversation. That is going to be on episode 35 of the Metal from the Inside podcast, coming a week from today. New episodes are released every single Friday. When we get back from this short break, we're going to get right into my conversation with my good friend Pete Pardo of Sea of Tranquility as we discuss our top 10 favorite Whitesnake songs. Welcome back, everybody, to the Metal from the Inside podcast. A lot of you probably recognize who I have as a guest on the podcast this week. For those who are familiar with Sea of Tranquility, I have Mr. Pete Pardo on this week, and it's really weird for me to have Pete on and me introducing him. A lot of the time, you know, I'm on the Hudson Valley Squares, and we do some videos over on Pete's channel, so it's weird to be introducing Pete. But like I said, many of you know Pete from his work with Sea of Tranquility, the publication and website that Pete has been a part of and has worked on for many, many years now. And he has a very successful YouTube channel, again, that I'm sure many of you guys watch and keep up to date with. So yeah, thank you so much for being here, Pete. It is an honor to have you on my podcast this time.
It's great to be here, Sydney, and hello, everybody. I've been hoping to come on yours and for quite a while, and what better episode to come on than to talk about Whitesnake, which is a band that I love to talk about. So I'm happy to be here, and you know, Sydney and I work together quite a bit over the last few months, which is great, and I love what you're doing here on your channel too, so I'm happy to help and then talk about bands we love. So it's all about.
Yeah, so like Pete just mentioned, we are talking about Whitesnake today, and this is the first episode I've done where I'm going to have Pete talk a little bit about just how he got into Whitesnake, and just a little bit, maybe question-wise, more of what I have here is a typical interview, but we're going to do a different style episode today, and we're going to be actually discussing our top 10 Whitesnake songs, and this is more of a Sea of Tranquility style video, so I thought, what better guest to have than Pete himself on for the first kind of episode like this. So we're going to get into our top 10 Whitesnake songs, you know, from the very start of Whitesnake to everything that they're doing now. And yeah, Pete, I wanted to get into, like I mentioned, a little bit about just how you got into Whitesnake. You know, maybe if you have like a first memory of really listening to the band. I'm not sure if there's like a specific one that stands out in your mind, but you know, with a lot of our favorite bands, as you know, there's usually that moment where we remember hearing them for the first time or an album that really stuck with us. So what was that experience like for you with Whitesnake?
Yeah, well, I mean, first, you know, I'm a massive Deep Purple fan. That's my favorite band of all time. And of course, Mr. Coverdale sang for Deep Purple for a couple of albums, right? So I was already very familiar with David before he formed Whitesnake. And so there was that. That was like, so no matter what he would have done, I probably would have been totally into. But, you know, the crazy thing is when he formed Whitesnake and started, you know, pumping out those first couple of albums, really hard to get here in the States. So it's not like, you know, you'd go to the record shop and automatically see, you know, Trouble and Saints and Sinners and Come and Get It and all those early albums, Love Hunter and what have you. They just, they weren't being showcased, and in some cases they were only available as imports. So those first couple albums, I never saw, I never bought. It wasn't until they released the live album, Live in the Heart of the City, that I finally, in fact, I bought that as an import. Bought because I remember seeing that wonderful live painting on the front. And I was like, oh, Coverdale and his band, right? I got to get this because I'm a Deep Purple fan, right? So I bought that and I was totally into it. But then again, you know, a couple other albums came out that just weren't available here. So for me, the moment and the album where it really made that big impact on me that has never ended to this day was the Slide It In album. Because that was, you know, the big Geffen Records push here in the States. That was already been released in the UK a few months before. And then, of course, they had the lineup switch. Mel Galley's out. John Sykes is in. I'm sorry, Mickey Moody's out. John Sykes is in. They redo some of the guitar parts for the U.S. release. They get ready to do the tour. And then Mel Galley gets hurt, you know, with his hand. And Sykes has to do the whole thing. But that was really the album that really brought them to the attention of, you know, hard rock fans back in the early 80s in this country anyway. Because, you know, Slow and Easy all of a sudden was all over the radio. And that was the first time you really heard Whitesnake on FM rock radio here in this country. So that started it. And that really began my love affair with this band. But once that album broke them here in the States, all of a sudden all the previous albums started to become available, you know, for purchase pretty easily here. So I started, you know, scooping up the other albums that came before it. And then before you know it, a couple of years later, that big album that everybody bought came out, and there was really no looking back from there. So that's kind of how it all started with me.
Yeah, it's really interesting because if I'm correct, yeah, because they didn't break really right in the States. So they were more of the UK in the beginning, and then they ended up transitioning over here. So yeah, that's interesting. I never realized that those albums were so difficult to find originally, you know, but we'll get into it when we'll get into the top 10 songs. But do you typically have a preference when it comes to Whitesnake? Do you tend to favor the earlier version rather than the more commercial or glam era, as we like to call it, when it comes to the band?
Well, I'll give you the lame-o answer. I love it all. But I mean, you know, what it is for me, it's like I don't really, other than the fact that they had the big hair and all that kind of stuff like all the other bands at the time, I never considered them kind of part of that glam thing. Because even though they had the look for the 87 album and certainly for Slip of the Tongue that came after it, I mean, the music didn't sound like any of that stuff. They certainly didn't sound like Poison or Motley Crue or any of those bands. But I mean, that was indicative of the time. But I mean, I love the early band. I really like that kind of bluesiness of those first handful of albums, you know, with Bernie Marsden and Mickey Moody on twin lead guitars. And, you know, you had John Lord and Ian Paice from Deep Purple joining the band. And that was a pretty magical time. That it's funny when you talk to folks like from Europe, that's their favorite version of the band because, you know, Whitesnake were pretty big overseas during that period of time where they couldn't even get arrested here, let alone, you know, have their albums for sale in the record shops. So I think most people here in this country, when they think of Whitesnake, they think of Slide It In, 87 album mainly, and a little bit of Slip of the Tongue, whereas they had a really nice career before any of that happened. So I look back on the early period very, very fondly. But I would say, if I was to be really honest with you, the 87 album is probably my favorite album of all time.
Wow.
Yeah. But my favorite lineup of the band, and I think the one that I never got to see them, is the Slide It In band. I mean, that's just, you know, Cozy Powell and John Sykes and Mel Galley and Coverdale and Neil Murray and John Lord. I mean, that's to me, I mean, but again, none of these lineups for the most part really lasted long. But I got to tell you, I love the current band. I've seen the current band live numerous times. I like all the new albums, so it's hard because when you have a band that you love so much that have been through so many eras, so many different lineups and all that kind of stuff, it's really hard to pinpoint one. But I love the current band. I think they're terrific. I think Reb is a great guitar player, and he's now David's kind of like, what does he call them? His musical conductor. Every couple lineups, you know, it used to be Doug Aldrich, now it's Reb. And he's just a great player. I love his stuff in Winger as well. And Joel is a fantastic guitar player. And the whole band is really, really good. And it's hard to say. But I think, you know, for me, obviously, because I grew up during that time, I think the Slide It In to the 87 album kind of period there, those couple of years, I mean, that's magical. But I love the early stuff. love the early stuff.
Yeah, like I mentioned, I've mentioned on Sea of Tranquility before, and I'm sure some of the people watching is aware of this, but, you know, I was getting into Whitesnake, you know, those kind of big albums that, you know, you just talked about, the Slide It In, the 87 album. And I mean, at first, you know, I remember hearing the version of Here I Go Again on the original Saints and Sinners record. And I was like, what is this? Like, this is because, you know, it was more bluesy when I was getting into the band. And, you know, it took me a little bit and I kind of really dived into those earlier records. And I appreciate that, yeah, that version of the band just as much as I love all of the albums and records that came after, because I mean, like you said, it was just a different, to me, it's almost in a way, it feels like two different entities in a way, kind of indicative of the time. You know what I mean? It was obviously the 70s was a more kind of bluesy, hard rock time. And then obviously transitioned into a period of bigger riffs and, you know, more production. And it was just a product of the time. I feel like that
was. Yeah, I mean, even those like early 80s albums before Slide It In, those were still very 70s sounding albums. And it really wasn't until you could start to hear a little bit of what we heard on Slide It In on the Come and Get It album. And also on, you know, Ready and Willing to an extent. But those first, you know, Love Hunter and Trouble and all those other albums, they're just blues rock albums.
Yeah.
That's what they are. I mean, you know, you get the occasional metallic riff or whatever. But I mean, slide guitars, I mean, you could almost call it like British Southern rock, because a lot of that early Whitesnake stuff doesn't sound a hell of a lot different from some of the heavier Lynyrd Skynyrd or Blackfoot or Molly Hatchet stuff that you heard at the time. And it's just, and I love it. It's great. And, you know, Coverdale was a freaking beast back then. You know, I mean, to me, I say this all the time. I say it jokingly, but like, it's like I have had a man crush. I'm a happily married man to a woman, right? But I have had a man crush on Coverdale for like 30 years, more than that, actually. It's just, he's just the coolest to me.
Oh, man.
I think I would love to hang out with David Coverdale. He's just, to me, he's everything you want in a front man, and I get his voice isn't what it used to be and all that kind of stuff. But you go see them live today, he still is the man on stage. He has the audience in the palm of his hand.
He's the nicest guy. He's so nice. Occasionally, he'll like respond to me on Twitter, and I'll be like, ooh. I mean, he's just so nice. And I mean, to me, he's just a rock legend. Like, I feel like it doesn't get more
royalty.
Yeah, rock and roll than David Coverdale. I don't know. It's just in all facets of his career, from Deep Purple to, you know, the 87 records now, you know, so.
Yeah. I mean, the guy has been involved and sang so many songs that between the two bands that are so important to everything that is me.
Right.
And it's just like, you know, the day he retires from music, I'm going to be pretty sad. Even though, I mean, you have all this music from all the decades that he's recorded and released stuff, and which is great, but it'll be sad to think that there's not going to be another Whitesnake album coming out, or even a Coverdale solo album, right? Or a show that you can go see. I'll be sad when that day comes. Because I've been listening to him and watching him for a good chunk of my life. And it's like, I'm not quite ready to let that go yet.
Yeah, he talks about the final, I think he was talking before the pandemic about doing some kind of final tour.
Yeah.
And I've seen the headlines come up once in a while on, you know, Facebook. And I'm like, no, like, don't talk to me about it. I don't want to know.
I
don't want to even think about it. But you know, you also have to put it in perspective of like, yeah, he's in his late 60s. And
yeah, it's,
you know,
the grind. Yeah.
Yeah,
I totally get it.
Must be,
I will,
difficult.
Say though, if he's going to do it, and not that I want to tell him how to do it, but if he's going to do it, he should pick a couple of shows where he can make something happen, where Blackmore and Hughes come out and play with him, right? Or Jesus, just make peace with John Sykes for one night and have him come out and play a couple songs or something. You know, I mean, I think that would be pretty cool. But
yeah, it would be. It would be really cool. I hope that, you know, happens. And you know, I hope that we do get a final tour, which I think we will. I think David Coverdale is one of those people where he won't just say, I'm not going to tour anymore. He'll do a final tour when this is all over and we can get live shows back and, you know, kind of get into the swing of normal life. So I have my fingers crossed for that. And hopefully that's not the final tour anytime soon.
We'll see. I mean, you know, we've heard so many bands talk about the final tour. And then, I mean, Coverdale himself said years ago that he was done touring. And look where that got him. He's done like three since. So, yeah. So I'll take it with a grain of salt. But hopefully he keeps going. Well, you know, I mean, he's had the last year to kind of chill out and relax. Maybe that's because that's what happened the last time. I think he had an injury or something like that, and they took time off the road because he was going to call it a day. And then he's like, oh, I've had all this rest, I feel great, let's keep going. So hopefully, fingers crossed,
yeah,
it doesn't happen anytime soon.
I hope it doesn't, because we can't lose David Coverdale. But without further ado, we're going to get into our top 10 Whitesnake songs. And again, this is ranging from the early era we discussed up until those 80s records to recent records. It's kind of all for to choosing. I'm going to have Pete start. Guest always gets the first pick. So we're going to go from 10 to 1. So what is your number 10 Whitesnake song, Pete?
All right. Can I cheat and pull a mulligan for my number 10?
Absolutely.
All right. Yeah. I had two and I was like, I couldn't leave one off. So tied for number 10 is going to be Ready and Willing, the title track to that album, and Children of the Night. Big, heavy, bruising song I absolutely love. I couldn't leave it off. I actually, you know, Ready and Willing was my number 10. Then I'm like, oh, Children of the Night. And then I flip-flopped and I'm like, you know what? Sydney will be nice and she'll let me include them. There was a tie for my number 10. I love them both. I mean, they're, you know, you got a later period one. Well, not that late, an 80s one, and an earlier song too. But they're both great kick-ass songs.
Yeah, no, I love Children of the Night. That is such, it's, again, like you mentioned, their songs, even though that was on that Monster record, it wasn't like, it was a glam song. I don't know how to describe heavy. It, you know? It's
yeah,
heavy.
That album is heavy as all hell, yeah.
Right. Yeah, that's awesome. So my number 10, it's funny, I'm going to be just choosing, I guess, it's interesting because I have some songs in here that people probably won't expect, but I also have songs on here that are people are definitely going to expect because I just couldn't leave them off because it's when I think of my essential Whitesnake, there's just some songs on here that they're really big, but I just have to put them on for like my love of Whitesnake. So my number 10 is going to be Here I Go Again. And it's going to be, honestly, I could do either. I could do the earlier version. I could do the 87 version. So I don't know if that's even me cheating on my own podcast, but I could do either. I don't know. That's one of those songs where it's, I know it's overplayed to hell and I know that it gets played a lot, but it's one of those songs that I could hear personally over and over again. And I can never get sick of it. It's just one of those like sing-along songs that I just love. And I mean, it's, you know, when you think about it and you think of like Whitesnake's career and their success, you know, it's kind of like the definitive Whitesnake song for a lot of people, maybe not the diehard fan, but a lot of people. So I don't know. I had to put that on my list. It felt wrong leaving it off for me. So that's going to be my number 10.
I mean, it's their Don't Stop Believing.
Basically. Right.
And it's the, you know, if you don't know who Whitesnake is,
you know,
you
that,
know
song.
That song, right? And I will say, I mean, you know, I mean, that song and Crying in the Rain, which are, and also Fool for Your Lovin' is another song that they redid from earlier albums. And I got to say, I like the 87 version of Here I Go Again a little bit better. It just seems that song, for whatever reason, seems like it was made for the mid 80s.
Yeah.
You know, it's got to have that big, you know, production value type of thing. And I don't dislike the earlier version at all, but I like the, you know, the latter period better. But yeah, I mean, that's their biggest song, right?
Yeah, that little lyric change in there too. It was in the older version, like God, what was it? It was Hobo instead of Drifter, and they changed it for the 87 version. So every time I hear that one,
the Hobo's kind of weird. Yeah, I know. Yeah.
You had to change it, make it more listener friendly. But yeah,
plus no. It's got that great Adrian Vandenberg guitar solo, which
it's a class. It's a classic. And I know it's like, I know some people look at it, it's like it's the crazy train of Whitesnake. You can't get away from it. But man, I don't know how you can listen to that song and not just feel great afterwards.
Yeah, and then when they play it live, it's always a lot of fun. And I'm like the guy, it's like I don't need to hear it much during the year, but if I go see them, you know, in concert and stuff, you got to hear it, right? It's gotta be. Well, my number 9, I'm gonna stick to the 87 album for a rip-roaring track called Bad Boys.
Oh, that again, opener
so heavy, right? And Ansley Dunbar drumming, man, on that album. You know, and then it's funny how he did such a great job on that album, the only album he ever played with Whitesnake. But then you go see them live and you got Tommy Aldridge just killing it on a song like that. And it's just, that's why I think Tommy was made to play the songs from that album. Dunbar did a great job, don't get me wrong, but man, Tommy Aldridge is the man to play all those classic songs from that album. I mean, he's the man. He's another one. Guy is like a freak of nature.
He's insane.
What he can do at his age. I mean,
he does the drum solo with the hands, and it's mind blowing. And every time I see it, because he typically does that, you know, every Whitesnake show. So every time he does it, I'm like, oh my God, like that's just, he's just a monster. I mean, and he's a legend in his own right. I mean, of course, he's played in so many different bands. He's like one of my favorite drummers ever. So I love that song. Like you said, such a heavy song, and too, like, it was such a great song, in my opinion, to kick off that album, like just like going at it from the first song. So it's so great.
What a riff. Yeah. Bad Boys. Oh. So good.
So we're just going to keep going with this 87 album. It gets a little more diverse for me as we get a little bit higher up my list. But my number 9 is going to be Still of the Night. I mean, come on, that's another one. My favorite part of that song is, I guess, like the bridge, like that kind of like breakdown, you know, between the solo and, you know, they head back into the last chord. It's just so good. It's just everything about that song is just perfect. And again, another Big White Snake hit, but I love the video. I mean, it's like all those videos from the 87 album were so classic too. And you know, the whole like David standing on the stage with like the light around him and all this stuff. It's just, it's a great video all around and a great song. So that's going to be my number 9.
Well, those who know me know more about that later.
So. Yeah, I was going to say, I know you talked about it before. So I was like, this is probably going to be a little bit higher on Pete's list, but.
Yeah. My number 8, we're going to go to Slide It In for probably my second favorite song from this album. And another song that when they play it live, it's just so good. Yeah. Love Ain't No Stranger. What an anthem that is. Great chorus. Love the riffs in it. It's just so melodic, so memorable. Great, great. And what a vocal from Coverdale on that.
More about that later. But oh man, I love that song from beginning to end. And I love kind of the ebbs and flows of that song and how it goes from soft to heavy and soft to heavy. Damn, we're just going to stick with this 87 album for me. I really did not think this through when I was writing this list, that I was so like 87 album heavy from the bottom. My next one is going to be Is This Love? That's another one. I can't leave this off my list. This is another one I was just like, oh, I have to put this on there. To me, it was one of the songs that I wasn't really around then, so I was discovering all of this much later, but it was one of those songs that I heard, you know, from the get-go, and I saw the video and it was like, you know, whatever, Tawny Katane, and it was just like the whole thing. And again, another one of those songs that I could hear over and over again and just not get sick of. I don't know, again, some people might be like, Sydney, why are you picking all these hits? But I would say they're hits for a reason. They're great songs. So, you know, I love that song. So that's going to be my number 8.
I'll give you that. I'll give it to you. All right. Number 7, right? All right. So I'm going to go back a ways. So the title track to Saints and Sinners.
Ooh.
Which is a great song from a really great album. And again, this is Bluesy Whitesnake. And just some nasty riffing from Bernie Marsden and Mickey Moody. And what a groove to this song. It's got a little funk to it, too. Some of the early Whitesnake stuff, even though it's really bluesy, there's a little funk going on in some of those tracks. Kind of like, I think like Coverdale kind of carried a little bit of the Deep Purple Stormbringer Come Taste the Band style, which Blackmore, of course, hated it. That's why he left the band. But he kind of carried a little bit of that into the early Whitesnake albums, which I really dig because I love those albums quite a bit. So Saints and Sinners from a really underrated album from the band. I mean, those early albums, you know, everybody, when they talk about Whitesnake, and we covered this before, they talk about Slide It In and the 87 album. And I get it because I love them. They're my two favorites. But those albums that came before it are really good. Really good. If you're watching this podcast and you haven't heard any of those albums, stop what you're doing and go listen to them. They're really, really good.
Really great. There's so many hidden gems on some of those albums that are just absolutely so undiscovered. And again, before I really got into it, I had no idea about the songs because they never get any radio airplay. They never had any videos. You know, some of them do. The occasional one, if you can find it on YouTube, they have them. But there's so many gems. And it's like, please, if you have not heard it, please go listen to it because you're missing out big time. For me, I'm going to also kind of go back a little bit to those earlier albums and a song that they remade later on in their career. My number 7 is going to be Fool for Your Lovin', but the Ready and Willing version. And I also love the version that they did on the Live in the Heart of the City live album too, of that song. I love the 89 version because I love Slip of the Tongue. It's one of my favorite Whitesnake albums, but I feel like this one just has something more to it. I don't know. That one has the heavier riffs, but it has the feeling. Right?
The first version is from the gut. That's like there's some emotion to that early version that I don't think they quite captured on the Slip of the Tongue version.
Yeah, I mean, and when I listen to that one, and I do, I love it, but I think the earlier version is just, again, that was like that time period, like you mentioned, where it was just kind of turning over into the 80s, and you know, they were getting into that that sound that eventually became on to be, you know, slided in. But I love the original version, and the live version, like I said, is great. So that's going to be my number 7.
That's a good choice. Yeah, there's I think the chorus is a little smoother, I think, on the original.
Yeah.
A little more melodic. I think Coverdale was going for a little bit of a different sound. Then I love Steve Vai. Looking back all these, I remember when he first joined the band, I was ecstatic because I loved Vai and I still do. But looking back now, I don't think he was the perfect fit for the band. You know, he brings an element that kind of doesn't quite fit with the band. But I still like Slip of the Tongue a lot, though. But I think Fool for Your Loving works better on the earlier album for sure.
Yeah, definitely.
Number 6, Don't Break My Heart Again, another old gem. That's like a slow simmering, you know, dun, 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 dun. It's just got the wonderful Hammond organ, and that I like that song so much because that's a total Deep Purple style track from the band, and it's one of their I think that was a hit for them somewhat in the UK. That was played on the radio, and they used to play that live all the time, and I love that. And I love the understated vocal. You know, early on, the early Whitesnake albums, you know, he doesn't go for that over-the-top kind of that wail that we know so well from the 80s albums. He was definitely a little bit more restrained, a little huskier, you know, that tone that he had, that mid-range. And I love Don't Break My Heart Again. And I love, you know, Bernie Marsden, underrated backing vocalist in this band. He helped co-wrote a lot of those songs. And he was great on backing vocals on this song. And that is a really good kind of bluesy kind of mid-tempo song that I think most people probably have not heard.
Yeah. And you're totally right about Coverdale's vocals. And I was listening to, when I was getting ready for this, I was listening to like Snakebite today and kind of some of those earlier albums. And like, he definitely, it was just so much mellower. It was just very more smooth and not as, I don't even want to say like, I don't want to say David Lee Rothy with like the screams, but you know what I'm talking about? Like that type of sound. It was a lot smoother. So it's interesting that you said that, because to be honest, just when you listen to them side by side, some of those songs from, you know, the later albums and the earlier albums, it's kind of, like I said earlier, it kind of feels almost in a way like two different bands and like kind of how they evolved. But that's a great song.
Yeah, I think he was going for a little more of a soulful thing.
Yeah.
In the early albums, whereas from kind of like Come and Get It and Slide It In and On, he had this, I mean, I think that's just the direction the band was going in and then music was going in. He was going for that kind of, that metal god type of thing, although not metal, because they really were never a metal band, but like that hard rock, you know, that hard rock guy, he like fully embraced that. But beforehand, he was more of like a kind of a bluesy, soulful kind of singer. I mean, even on the Deep Purple albums, he was like that.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. Number 6, I'm going to go with a song actually off of the 89 album, Slip of the Tongue. I'm going to go with The Deeper the Love. I'm a big ballad person. We all know this. I love this song. I also want to give a shout out, because honestly, I think I prefer this version better than the actual version on the 89 album, is he did a version of this song. He did a show in Japan. Forget exactly what year he did the show. I'm blanking out in the year. But he did an acoustic show with Adrian Vandenberg.
Night on Darkers or something like that, I think it was called.
Yeah, it was something like that. And if you haven't heard that live album, I really recommend it, because it's just Adrian and on the acoustic and David singing. And that version of The Deeper the Love, I feel like has what we were talking about when I was talking about Fool for Your Love in the original version. Like, it just has like the emotion behind his voice when he's singing it. And you really, when you listen to that version especially, I feel like you really walk away like feeling something when you get done listening to it. So I'm actually in the middle of recording this. I'm going to flip to that version better than the version on the Slip of the Tongue record. And I love that song. It's, you know, another one of those sing-along songs for me. So that's going to be my number 6.
I never understood, I think the record label kind of screwed up there, because I think that Deeper the Love and Now You're Gone, which are the two ballads from that album, from the Slip of the Tongue album, should have been big like Is This Love was. I never understood why they didn't like try and push those as the singles. And, you know, that of course they went and really tried to push Fool for Your Lovin', which again was another older track that they redid. And that didn't really catch on as much as they thought. But I never understood why. I mean, Deeper the Love, that's like, it's got the it factor on it, right? You know, for because people were into ballads at the time. And I remember buying that album and thinking, oh, that's going to be a huge hit. Now You're Gone, that's going to be a huge hit. And neither one were. And I was like, I don't even know if they released either one as a single here. I don't even remember. I have to go look. But I think that was a missed opportunity.
Yeah. I mean, they did a video for it and everything, but it wasn't one of those songs that it's not one of those songs that ended up in their catalog. Like, you know, they have to perform Is This Love. They have to do, you know, these certain songs when they do live, you know. I think occasionally he'll do the Deeper the Love, but it's, you know, one of those, I think that whole album, like you just said, that whole album is, other than Fool for Your Lovin', you know, there's not like any song on there that was really super, you know, pushed and kind of carried on to Whitesnake later on. So yeah, I don't know why that they did that. It does not make a lot of sense.
Yeah, I mean, it's a weird album to begin with anyway. I mean, you have a song like Judgment Day, which I mean, that's like their big like Zeppelin, you know, Still of the Night Part Two type of thing. And like, you know, whatever. And then you got, you know, the stupid Kitten's Got Claws, whatever the hell it's called. I really don't like that song. But there's some really good material on that album, I think. It's a weird album for them. I mean, it's kind of like a transition album. And I think Whitesnake at that point in time were just kind of like, you know, like identity crisis mode, right? It's like, you know, what are we? It's like, we're really not that bluesy rock band anymore. We don't want to be the next Poison or Motley Crue or Rat. You know, we're older, elder statesmen and all that kind of stuff. But I think Coverdale and the guys were just trying to fit in. You know, they had a guy in the band playing guitar who that's really not what he wanted to do. But of course, they paid him a lot of money. Adrian, you know, got hurt and couldn't record the album, and then he's out touring with them, and he's trying. I mean, I feel sorry for anybody. I love Adrian Vandenberg; he's a great guitar player. But I feel sorry for anybody who's got to play lead guitar alongside Steve Vai, you know. And that had to have been tough for him. So it's just, you know, a weird time in the history of the band. But there's still plenty of good songs on that album. But I mean, that album disappointed a lot of people, and the sales, you know, were not what the album before it was. So, but I still like it. There's a lot of good tracks on there. Cool. All right, where are we up to? Number five?
Yes, number five.
All right, so I'm going to go fairly recent. The last couple albums. So they released this album about, God, it's probably like 10 years already. I forget exactly what year it came out, but it's been a little while. An album called Forevermore. And it's probably been more than 10 years, right?
I think it might have been 2011, if I'm correct. So maybe, okay. I think it might have been 10 years, yeah.
Yeah, it seems like yesterday for me, but you know, as you get older, Sydney, the years go flying by like you would not imagine. So it's like every time I'm like, oh yeah, that was like 3 years ago. Like, no, that was 12 years ago. I'm like, what? How did that happen? So, but anyway, my pick for number five, I love this song, and it's one of my favorite Whitesnake songs of all time, and I think it's should be on everybody's radar, is the title track Forevermore. It's so epic. It's like, it's basically, I don't know, it's kind of like Whitesnake's Kashmir in a weird way. It's so good. The vocals are amazing. It's just got, you know, the riffs are great, and the whole song just kind of like takes you on this journey, and it's really unlike anything they've ever done before. You know, you mentioned earlier the whole that kind of like that weird middle section of Still the Night, you know, right, where they get into that atmospheric part, you know, the dun 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 dun, and the whole thing is just like big and epic. Forevermore, the song is entirely like that. The whole song is like that. It's just so good, and Coverdale just absolutely kills it. And they do play that live quite a bit, you know, since they released this album. And whenever I go see them and they pull that one out, I'm like, I'm so happy. Like, please play Forevermore tonight. Please, David, if you're going to do anything for me, play that one song. And they usually do. So, yes, that's my number five. Great, great song. And I dig that album. I like all the recent Whitesnake albums quite a bit, actually.
I think he stayed pretty consistent, David Coverdale, with putting out pretty good records as the years have gone on. I mean, again, he's rock royalty, so he's had a lot of creative experience. He hasn't really let us down too much when it comes to the recent records. So it really is an underrated record. And I think just kind of due to the time, you know, that it came out, a lot, it's kind of gone under a lot of people's radar. So my number five, I'm going to be going back to the album Trouble, which is a song that I don't even know if a lot of people know this one. My number five is Love to Keep You Warm. And I love this song. This is like, this is really kind of what we were talking about, like the soulful, like bluesy. I heard the song for the first time, and it's like so catchy. There's so many great things about it. And again, another one of those songs that I feel like really has gone under the radar and a lot of people don't know. And I love that song. It's got, like we were just mentioning, like he's got really kind of soulful vocals on that one. And I love that one. So that's my number five.
That's like a song where he's like putting on the charms, right? So you can just picture him up on stage, right? Singing that song. He pulls the microphone over and he's looking at one of the ladies in the front row, right? You know, that's the whole vibe you get on that. That's a great tune. That's a really good tune. But that's very indicative of kind of the mellower stuff that they were doing back early in the day. And it's very bluesy, very kind of emotional. And, you know, he could do that crooning thing when he wanted to very well, actually.
Yeah. And it's got that little, it's not, you know, at that time, like you mentioned, it wasn't big guitar riffs. It has like a little itty bitty riff. And then, you know, the chorus does open up a little bit, but then it kind of just goes right back into the riff. And for a song at that time, it wasn't anything, you know, it was no epic track, but I love that one. So I had to put that high on my list. It's one of my favorites.
Yeah, it's good. It's a great chorus on that. I dig that a lot. That's a really good choice. Really good choice. I did not expect that. Very cool. Well, for my number four, I'm gonna stick back in those in the old days as well. And this is probably my favorite old song, pre-slided in song from the band. Written by Bernie Marsden, Walking in the Shadow of the Blues. Love it. Love Walking in the Shadow of the Blues so much. It's just, I love the bass line from, was that Neil Murray, I believe, who played it? I believe so. And it's got some great guitar solos. And this is quintessential British blues rock right there.
Yeah.
And again, it's an emotional vocal. He gets in some gutsy stuff on it, but it's just such a searing bluesy song. I absolutely love it. And actually my favorite version of it is on the Live in the Heart of the City album, the live album. It's even better than the studio version on there. I love it. And they put out a live album in early mid 2000s, when Doug was still in the band. So it was Doug and Reb, and it's a double live album. I have it. I forget the name of it, but they've got so many live albums, but they do on that live album, they do all sorts of old classics from, you know, both Slide It In and the 87 album and those early albums. And that's on there as well. And just a great, great song. I wish they would play that live still. So good. So good.
Yeah, there are so many of those songs, right, where it's like, I wish that you would play this live. They've got so, I mean, it's hard to fit everything in a set list, especially when you're trying to appease an audience of people who may not be all, like, you know, diehard fans. But yeah, there's so many songs like that one. I mean, you wish they would just throw it in there, right? Throw the diehard fans a bone, you know?
Yeah, but you know what it is too? A song like that, it's like, it's almost like, in my mind anyway, it's like to hear them play that, you hear the song and one of the main things in the song is that Hammond organ from John Lord. And, right. You know, God bless him, he's no longer with us. And it's almost like you can't play that without him being there, so to speak. Yeah. So when I hear, you know, when I hear that song, I think of Bernie Marsden playing the lead guitar on that. I think of John Lord right next to him, you know, on the Hammond. It's like, but a great song nonetheless.
And I totally agree. I mean, John Lord is one of another rock royalty, you know, legends. Yeah. He just added so much to all of the White Snake songs he was on and, you know, all of the other projects that he did. So I completely agree with that one. It's hard to replace him.
Yeah, it is. I think some people forget how many albums he played on in the early part of the White Snake catalog. You know, everybody always thinks of John Lord, okay, the mainstay in Deep Purple for all those years. But, you know, when Purple broke up and he went and joined David and White Snake, I mean, he was a key part of that band for a number of albums. And
love John Lord. My number four, I'm going to be going to the Slide It In album, the opening, I believe it's the opening track, Gambler. I love Gambler, one of my favorite White Snake songs. I love that song. To me, it's got this super cool, just great introduction and kind of just the driving, like, guitar riff. I think it was just such a great song off of that record and one of my favorites off of Slide It In. It's so good. And John Sykes. you can't beat John Sykes.
Gambler is great, and it's could be my third favorite song off of that album.
Yeah,
I love Gambler, and you know, it's funny, that album, so many of the riffs on that album were actually created and written by Mel Galley, who you know, was formerly of Trapped Keys with Glenn Hughes, before Glenn joined Deep Purple and so on and so forth. But it's amazing how I think there's a sound to that album which is very unique, and none of the other White Snake albums sound like that. I think it's because of him. But of course, he, you know, couldn't continue on with the band because he got an arm in or a hand injury or something like that, which is a real shame. But Gambler is great. That's a good bluesy, dark, heavy rocker. I dig that one quite a bit.
I totally know what you mean about the way that that entire album sounds, and I can't even exactly put my finger on it, but it doesn't sound like any of the albums before or after. It's like, it almost kind of just stands by itself. Like, it doesn't, it's not like you listen to that and then you go on and listen to the 87 record and you're like, oh, yeah, they sound similar. Like, it just, I feel like it's just a completely standalone album. Like, none of anything else their catalog sounds like it.
Yeah, and it's, and you can't even, like, put it down to like Martin Birch's production, because they work with him a lot. Like, so it's not like, you know, he didn't work on a couple of their albums before then, but I think it's got to do with the lineup on it. I mean, you've got Cozy, right? You got John Lord, you got Neil Murray, you know, who had been in the band, you know, quite a bit early, you know, him and John were both in the band prior to that. But I think Mel Galley brings a certain guitar sound, because if you've listened to the trapeze stuff that he did, he's got a very specific tone. His riffs are constructed a very specific way. And what's, I don't know if you ever had a chance to listen to the UK version of Slide It In versus the US version. So they're really different. They're really different, but there's still that key component on both versions. You know, you, the UK, you know, you listen to the UK version and you got, you know, Mickey Moody and his, some of his slide guitar and all that kind of stuff. Well, they lifted a lot of that for the US version, and in comes, you know, John Sykes with his big riffing and the pinch harmonics and all that kind of stuff to kind of jazz it up a little bit for the American audiences. But there's still that core of the album that's similar between both versions. And I gotta say, I think it's partly Cozy and it's partly Mel Galley, because neither one of those guys are on any albums before or after. And that's, I think that's why that album sounds so like kind of special and different, because you listen to Slide It In and then you listen to, you know, even though Sykes is on the US version of Slide It In, you listen to the 87 album, that's completely different, right?
Yeah.
That's like amps up the metallic aspect of it, like a million notches, right? So, is it me? I kind of lost track.
Yeah, we are
we're talking to him like, oh, who goes? What number are we on? I don't know.
We're on number three. Yep, number three.
Number three. All right, so this one could even be higher, but I'm pretty comfortable where it's at number three. And this is another one of those songs that they recorded earlier on and then redid for the 87 album. And I'm talking about Crying in the Rain, which, and I'm going to quote Mr. Butch Jones right now. God damn that guitar from Mr. John Sykes, right? Because he's just, I mean, this song is so heavy. I mean, it's amazing. You listen to the two versions back to back, how much heavier and in your face the 87 version is. And John Sykes is, I mean, the guitar riff is enormous. Ansley Dunbar's drums, Coverdale is shrieking up a storm. And then that guitar solo is just like shredding beyond belief. And it's just, it's so heavy and bombastic. And that is like, that's basically that album, right? It's like, if you didn't know it already, you listen to that song, that sets the tone for the entire album. And it's just in your face. Whitesnake is back. We're bigger, louder, heavier than ever. And I just love Crying in the Rain. And I think that, you know, if we talked before about Coverdale, you know, being more soulful early on than doing this hard rock kind of God on especially this album. Crying in the Rain is the act, is the song that defines him as that guy.
Yeah.
Because he is up there shrieking up a storm, and things were never the same again.
Man, and what I love about that too, that song too, and that version, is that I feel like they were able to merge the bluesy sound that they had on that original version with, you know, the pinch harmonics and kind of like the more, I don't want to say shreddy, but kind of more metal, you know, sounding, you know, guitar sound, you know, that the verse, like just the riff that goes, you know, behind when he's singing. And it's just, I feel like they were able to keep that bluesy vibe that they had with the original one, and we're able to kind of transfer it over into this new sound from that original song. So I mean, I completely agree.
And yeah, they amped up the intensity quite a bit. Yeah. You know, Coverdale took it up another notch, and of course, Sykes, then you have Sykes there, and Sykes is going to do his thing. And yeah, I think the structure of the song and the vibe of the song is still the same. It's very similar, but you've got, you know, Coverdale is singing it a little differently, much more aggressive, much more, you know, higher pitch and doing that wailing thing that he was so known for. And then you got, you know, you got Sykes there, and it's like, you know, whereas the original version, it's not a riffy song, so to speak. The new version is all about that. So it's like the base of the song is the same, but yeah, it's amazing. You listen to them both back to back, you're like, whoa, okay, all right, whoa, you know.
Yeah, it's really,
love it, though.
It's I love how that comparison exists between a lot of those songs. And again, it kind of goes back to like the direct evolution of the band. And like, it's just so interesting because a lot of those bands, they don't really redo songs like that. So, you know, this one's like a direct comparison to see how that they evolved, you know, over the years, which is cool because, you know, that doesn't really happen a lot of the time. My number three, you talked about it earlier. I'm going to go with Love Ain't No Stranger. This is just one of my... Obviously, it's number three, one of my favorite Whitesnake songs. And when I saw Whitesnake for the first time, that was when it became one of my favorite Whitesnake songs because I remember going because I was, again, my age is disappointing, but I was on the younger side. When I did see them for the first time, I was like 15 or 16 or whatever. And I was going, I was like, I want to see Is This Love? Like, this is the song, you know, all the hits that I kind of grew up knowing. And then I had known Love Ain't No Stranger, but it was when I saw it live that just something clicked in me and I just fell in love with the song so much more than I had already liked it beforehand. Probably my favorite song off of Slide It In, you know, Gambler probably being the second. But again, I kind of love the ebbs and flows of that song, how it starts out quiet, gets really heavy. And, you know, I think David's vocals, like you mentioned, really, really shine on that song.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing like seeing Whitesnake and, you know, you hear that opening keyboard thing.
Oh, really?
Going, you know, who knows where the cold wind blows? I'm like, yes! You know, it's like
so good. Oh, man, I would do anything to be at a Whitesnake show right now that just like flooded me back.
Yeah, there's nothing. There's very few bands that get me jacked like a Whitesnake concert. I totally become like 15 all over again. You know, obviously I'm not close to 15 anymore, but yeah.
That's awesome.
All right, my number two, excuse me, let's go back to Slide It In for it's got to be Slow and Easy, right? I mean, that's what a great that's just classic stuff. And I love the guitar licks in it. I love that da-na-na-na-na. Again, that's Cozy right there, right? Cozy doing his thing in the song, and Coverdale putting in a pretty commanding performance. I remember when Slow and Easy first started to hit here in this country, a lot of people were like comparing them to Zeppelin. It's like, because, you know, most people, the casual rock fan, had never really heard Whitesnake before Slide It In, because they, you know, they had no presence here. But, you know, some of us did. We were like, oh, yeah, there they are. That's the guy, right? But a lot of people were like, oh, they're just Led Zeppelin ripoffs. And that's what they thought that song was. It's got kind of this Black Dog thing going on, right? Whatever. But I love Slow and Easy. It's just a really cool track, and it never gets old. And I love his vocal on it. I love everything about it. So that's my number two.
That drum part, again, that it gets you so hyped when you listen to it. It's so good. Again, Cozy Powell, it's one of the greatest drummers, which, again, when you really think about it, Whitesnake had a long list of fantastic drummers, just like absolutely monster drummers throughout the entirety of the band's career. So for me, my number two, we're going to go back to early Whitesnake again. My number two is Ain't No Love in the Heart of the City.
Oh, yeah.
That's like all I can say is, it's so good. It's so good. And it's interesting because they put this on a couple of different albums, because they did it a couple times and it was on the Live in the Heart of the City, which I love the live version as well. And it's really funny because I talk about Almost Famous a lot, but in that movie, they have the fake band and they're supposed to be kind of like a 70s band, obviously. Happened and it's supposed to take place in 1973, but they have a song, you know, they wrote a bunch of songs for this band for the movie, and there's one song in there that is like a direct ripoff of Ain't No Love in the Heart of the City, and every time I hear it, I'm like, you totally took that from Whitesnake, because it's the same riff and everything. But I mean, it's just, again, got that bluesy feel, and David's vocals also, I feel like, really, really shine on that one. That had to be pretty high on my list. So that's my number two.
That's a good choice. It's one of the only early songs that they still play live to this day.
Yeah.
That's like audience participation time, right? They drag it out to like 10 minutes, and, you know, it, over and over, everybody sings the chorus, and it's like, it's great. It's just, you know, you got to have it at a Whitesnake concert. So good choice. All right, the grand finale here, right? The number one. So, I mean, this is should be no surprise to anybody who knows me, but Still the Night is my favorite Whitesnake song of all time. It's also one of my favorite songs of all time. And I still remember I told this story before. Sydney, you may or may not have heard it. I actually drove through a snowstorm in 1987 from New Paltz, from SUNY New Paltz, to Rock Fantasy in Middletown. the day that that album came out because I had to get it. And I literally, it took me like 2 hours to get from New Paltz to Middletown because I had to buy that album. And I remember bringing it back to my dorm room, or actually I was living off campus at the time in an apartment. And I was like, this is the greatest thing ever. And I remember that song just totally slayed me. And then the video came out, and you know, it was kind of disappointing because in the video John Sykes isn't there anymore, Cozy right. Powell isn't there. Where's the band, right? They got, you know, Vivian Campbell and Adrian Vandenberg and Rudy Sarzo, and I'm like, okay, whatever. But if that song, and I played that album to death for years afterwards, I still play it a lot, but that song prompted me to suggest to my TV production class in college, we had an assignment, we had to make a music video. We actually made a music video to Still of the Night, and I love horror movies, I love werewolves, so we did a werewolf, original werewolf story set to Still of the Night, and wow. We got like first place or something like that in the class or whatever. It was so much fun, you know, doing this like kind of werewolf horror story to the music of Still of the Night. So, yeah, I have it on DVD. I watch it every now and then. I'm like, it brings back good memories. But but now whenever I hear that song, I always think of the music video we did.
Wow. I had never heard that story before about you going to get it at Rock Fantasy. But it's really funny that you mentioned that about the video thing too, because that's another thing, is that all the original people who played on that album weren't in the videos anymore. And I don't even think Vivian Campbell played on any Whitesnake studio recordings, right? He was just in the videos. He played a couple live shows.
They did the whole tour. Yeah, that band did the whole tour. But then after the tour, Coverdale got rid of all of them. It's like, all right, you know.
Well, most of them. Started over from scratch. But yeah, I mean, he was in the band for like 10 seconds. He was in and he was out. But I mean, and that's, a lot of people do think that like Rudy Sarzo played and that Adrian Vandenberg played on those records, and they didn't. They were just in the videos. So it's an interesting point. For me, my number one, if a lot of people follow me on Twitter, they probably heard me talk about this song to death. My number one's Now You're Gone from Slip of the Tongue. I love this song. I just love this song. This is one of those songs where I talk about all the time. I love melody. I think that this song is such a great melody to it. I don't know. I just, it was another one of those songs I could listen to over and over again. And it was really funny because on Twitter, David Coverdale, this is like a cool little story that made me like have like a fangirl moment. David was doing, back in the spring, he was doing like these covers, like he was doing like just short acoustic covers of like Whitesnake songs. And like David Coverdale's so funny on Twitter. He just posts the most random things you could ever think of all day. It's like he sits on his phone and goes on Twitter all day. And it's all David. Like, it's not somebody else posting for David. It's David, and he's posting memes and he thinks he's just hilarious and it's wonderful. But he posts these.
He's out on tour, I think.
It's hilarious. He'll post like memes and it's just like so random. And it's like every other tweet is David Coverdale posting a meme. And it's the greatest thing. But he was doing this acoustic cover thing. He wasn't doing Now You're Gone. So I tweeted him and I was like, I have a special request. Like, I didn't think he'd actually do it. And within 5 minutes, 5-10 minutes, the next video that comes up is David Coverdale singing Now You're Gone. And I have to say, I haven't had my fangirl moments off of my interviews and all that stuff. But that was like such just an amazing moment. And I was like, thank you. And he was like, it's my pleasure. And I was like, that's just, I don't have words for how cool that is. But I love that song. And because of that song, I mean, I do have a special place in my heart for that kind of era of the band. I mean, I love Rudy Sarzo so much. He's just one of my favorite bass players and just people. And I mean, I just have a very special place in my heart for that lineup. And that's my number one. And I'll listen to that song over and over again.
You know, one of the big mysteries about that song, I've always thought. So if you, I remember when the album came out in the liner notes, David thanks Glenn Hughes. I mean, they're friends anyway. They worked together in Deep Purple. Yeah. But he thanks Glenn Hughes Glenn Hughes is listed as doing backing vocals. They don't really say on what song or anything like that. But if you listen to that song during the chorus, when you hear the backing vocals go, this heart of mine, if you listen to that really carefully, that to me sounds like the only spot on the entire album that could be Glenn Hughes. But it's never been confirmed, so I don't know. But every time I listen to that song, I wait for that part and I'm like, that's got to be Glenn right there, because it doesn't sound like David, but I don't know. So maybe after this call, you go listen to it and see if that sounds like Glenn Hughes to you. I don't know.
I'm going to have to. I never realized that before. I'm trying to. I don't want to prematurely say anything, but I had Glenn. He was the first episode on my podcast, and I'm in the talks to possibly get him back on again to return and, you know, talk about what he's doing with the Dead Daisies and everything like that. So I'm going to have to definitely call him out on that and ask if he sang on that song, because I was not aware of that. I'm gonna have to go and really listen, because it's funny, I've heard it a million times, but I'm gonna have to go back and fine-tune my ear to a Glenn Hughes vocals. So it's interesting.
Yeah, ask him that, and then ask to say Pete Pardo's been trying to get in touch with you for the last 2 years to get you on Sea of Tranquility, so I'm still waiting. So
I will let him know. Man, thank you so much for taking the time to come on. You know, I'm sure I will have you return in the future. But again, I'm sure a lot of you know Pete has his own channel, Sea of Tranquility, his own website. He reviews everything. You post videos every day, which is just so amazing. I struggled to get a video up a week, get a podcast up a week. So it's amazing. You post videos every single day and is doing all different types of series, from just started your dream set lists to, I don't know, just everything under the sun you do. So
ranking the albums, top 10 songs, in the Prague seat and Hudson Valley Squares. I mean, yeah, it's just... it's crazy, right? My weekly shows with Martin Popoff, which cover all sorts of stuff. Yeah, it's pretty crazy.
It's insane. And again, I'll be back on Sea of Tranquility. I'm there every Monday. We do the Hudson Valley Squares, which a bunch of us who lived, I'm the only one who doesn't live there anymore, but who lived and do live in the Hudson Valley, get on and talk about rock and everything like that. So that'll be on Monday. And thank you so much, Pete. It was a blast talking Whitesnake with you. So thanks.
My pleasure. I could talk about Whitesnake every day, all day long. So, and we should probably plug, because we've already discussed it. So Sydney will be also appearing with me on Sea of Tranquility on our new show, which is called Dream Set List. You can probably guess what we're going to be doing. We're each going to be coming up with our dream set list for none other than Alice Cooper. So stay tuned for that. That's coming up in the not too distant future.
Yeah, that should be a good one. I'm already planning out my list once you ask. So yeah, that wraps it up for another episode of the Metal from the Inside podcast. And thank you again, Pete. It was a blast.
Thank you for having me.
You guys just finished listening to my conversation with Sea of Tranquility's own Pete Pardo as we dived into our 10 favorite Whitesnake songs. And like I mentioned in the introduction, I just really felt that this conversation was so laid back and just really felt like we were two pals, which we are, you know, discussing our favorite songs from one of our favorite bands. So I thought it was just a blast getting to sit and talk about Whitesnake and, you know, every era of Whitesnake from the early 70s records to what they're doing now. And I also wanted to mention, like Pete and I talked a little bit about in the episode, is that if you guys haven't taken the time to listen to some of those early Whitesnake records, I definitely recommend that you do so. Way back when, on my very first, or one of the first episodes I was a part of for the Hudson Valley Squares a couple of months back, we did a certain episode, I believe it was, you know, something along the lines of albums that we didn't like originally from a band that kind of really grew on us, and I picked an early Whitesnake record, and it was the Live in the Heart of the City record, which Pete and I mentioned quite a bit in our conversation. But I'd gotten a lot of messages from people after that episode that a lot of people had never taken the time to listen to that live record or a lot of the earlier Whitesnake records. So if you're somebody who has never listened to the period before Slide It In or even Ready and Willing or even anything before the 87 record, I definitely recommend that you go ahead and dig into those early Whitesnake records. There are some unbelievable gems on those early records that I feel go so unnoticed, and like Pete and I discussed, just there's so many amazing tracks, and you know, John Lord was such a big part of the band during that time, and so many different musicians were a part of that band before, you know, they evolved to the Slide It In era and the 87 era and the Slip of the Tongue era and, you know, every era that came after. So if you are somebody who has never dived into those records and after listening goes ahead and does so, be sure to let me know what you think, how the early Whitesnake records match match up to your favorite Whitesnake album. And I'm really curious to hear what you guys think about that period if you haven't been an avid listener of, you know, that era before. So definitely recommend you go ahead and check that out. But Pete is an absolute music expert, and it was so much fun having him on. He always has, you know, such incredibly insightful things to say about all types of music. You know, like I mentioned, he does a lot of different stuff over on his channel. And on CA Tranquility, they don't just cover metal, they cover, you know, rock. Pete covers jazz fusion, jazz, prog rock, you know, just everything. He covers every kind of rock subgenre and even things that aren't specifically labeled under the rock genre. So he does everything. Be sure to go ahead and check out Sea of Tranquility if you haven't already. I'm sure many of you, though, are familiar with Pete and the great work that he does. Like I mentioned, he puts out a video, you know, more than one video every single day, and it's just absolutely amazing. He's super dedicated to his craft and his publication and his channel and creating content for all of his listeners and audience. So it was really just a ton of fun to have him come on, and I'm sure that Pete will join me again for an episode in the future. Like I mentioned, I am a guest on CA Tranquility quite a bit, and I will be joining Pete very, very soon for a couple of episodes. One being an episode for his most recent segment entitled Dream Set List, where we're both going to get into our dream set list for Alice Cooper, and I'm already starting my list. I did way back when on an episode of the podcast, I did my top 20 Alice Cooper songs when Eddie Trunk did his Trunk Nation, you know, week about Alice Cooper and everything like that. But I actually have never really sat down and done a dream set list for Alice. So that's going to be a lot of fun, and I will, of course, share that with you guys once we film it and it is posted and everything like that. But like I mentioned, Pete and I are always working together and always have something up our sleeves, so there will be more with the two of us in the future, whether it's here or on Sea of Tranquility. If you really loved what you heard and are interested in donating to the Metal From the Inside podcast, you can go to www.anchor.fm/metalfromtheinside, click on the support button, and here you can donate either $1, $5, or $10 a month directly to the podcast. Every single dollar that I receive goes directly back into producing the podcast and creating content for you guys, and no donation is required. The podcast is available for 100% free on every streaming service. We are available on Spotify, Apple, iHeartRadio, Amazon Music, CastBox, Anchor, anywhere that you get your podcasts. We're also on YouTube. You can go ahead and subscribe to the Metal From the Inside YouTube channel so you can actually go ahead and watch this conversation with Pete. Just go ahead and type Metal From the Inside in on the YouTube search bar. We will be the first hit, and you can go ahead and subscribe. All of the interviews on the podcast that you might have listened to just through audio will also be available visually, like my Vinnie Appice interview, my interview with photographer Mark Weiss, my interview with Jolynn Turner. All of those have accompanying video. So if you would like to watch the interviews instead of just listen, that is definitely the route to go down. So I hope that I see you over on Metal From the Inside's YouTube channel. The other best places to stay up to date with Metal From the Inside, the best place being our website, is www.metalfromtheinside.com. We are also on Instagram at Metal From The Inside, on Twitter at MFTI Official, and we also have an official Facebook page that you can go ahead and like. If you'd like to stay up to date with me, Sydney Taylor, in real time, you can go ahead and follow me on Instagram at Sydney Anna Taylor and on Twitter at S Taylor Official. Thank you guys so much for taking the time to listen to this week's episode. As I mentioned, I have a great guest coming for episode 35 next week with one of my very, very favorite vocalists. It's going to be a wonderful conversation, and I'm so excited for you guys to listen to it. Be sure to go ahead and subscribe to the podcast, share with all of your metalhead friends, stay safe, take care of yourselves, and I will see you all right here next week on episode 35 of the Metal From the Inside podcast. Rock on.